We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello, Merry Christmas, sort of.
Happy Christmas, happy Boxing Day, and all those things.
This is another episode of Fusion Patrol, a special Christmas 2015 episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And we are looking at the highlight of the Christmas season, the Doctor Who Christmas special, The Husbands of River Song by Stephen Moffat. The Doctor is on a planet on Christmas, avoiding Christmas, when he is mistakenly thought of as a surgeon and called to a spaceship where he encounters River Song, who doesn't recognize him. The Doctor now gets to experience an adventure as River's companion, playing along slightly miffed as she attempts to steal a diamond lodged in the brain of King Hydroflax and sell it to some very, very unsavory people, etc. The Doctor Who Christmas special by Stephen Moffat. There we have it. What's your initial reaction to this? I think if I'm not mistaken, because of scheduling conflicts and whatnot, the last few years, Simon and I have done the Christmas specials on the podcast. So it's been a while since we've done one.
Yes, it has been.
So how did this work for you? Is it a Christmas special? Is it a Doctor Who episode?
Not bad. Not bad. I rather enjoyed it. It was not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Not perfect by any means, but there were some good moments to this episode. It's a little at times a little schizophrenic. It changes tone in terms of what kind of an episode it is, but for the most part, it was entertaining. I rather enjoyed it as far as Christmas episodes go. In fact, I think I'm trying to think if there's a Christmas episode I actually never really liked.
I can honestly say that most of them I didn't like or have been very indifferent to over the years. So for me, this was...
I think I like this one more than most.
This had to be the cream of the crop for me.
I might have liked this. I think the only other one that I... I was going to say... that David Tennant episode. The Next Doctor or The New Doctor, whatever that one was.
Yeah, that's all right, except for the Cyber King.
The Cyber King ruined it.
That's up there. Christmas Invasion is kind of okay. It's...
you mean David Tennant's foray, his entrance... Yeah, that one was okay.
If he'd been in it more, it would have been better. But
that was the only thing that ruined it.
I think I can't think of one I liked better. I definitely hated the one with a flying fish.
The Christmas Carol.
Yeah, and the Next Christmas was all right last year, and the Widow of the Witch was the wardrobe was terrible.
No, last year's was the one with Santa.
Right, that's last Christmas. Sorry, not
last
next Christmas.
And then the one before that, I believe, was that was the Return of the Great Intelligence and Clara. She was
right.
Still the Impossible
Snowman.
Girl. The Snowman, yes.
No, really, maybe Runaway Bride?
Was that a Christmas episode?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then there was the Titanic one.
Oh, that's right. I remember that one. Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Yeah,
have
I
to
think
say,
I think this one rates
my favorite
pretty high compared to the rest.
Yeah, I do, and so this has got a huge strike against it for me.
What, River?
Yeah, it's a huge strike against it, and I will say unequivocally that this is without doubt her second best performance as River. Her first best being Silence in the Library.
Oh, yes.
And so basically, I guess maybe she gets better with age because this is her second to last episode.
If we read the timeline right, this could very well be the second to the last episode in River's life. Although we have seen her come back.
Yes, not her post-life, but her
her digital construct.
Life, yes. So, yeah. Yeah. Although, you know, even there we have some things. Anyway, one of the things that I thought was nice is Capaldi is having fun in this episode.
It was a refreshing change for him because he's had a lot of gravitas to his character throughout the entire season. So to see him actually enjoy himself, him play the doctor having some kind of fun was somewhat entertaining. And of course, to watch him kind of try and help River to figure out who he was, to play with the whole thing about the spatial anomaly regarding the interior of the TARDIS as opposed to the outside, things like that. I mean, it was a refreshing change of pace for Peter Capaldi. I would imagine he probably had a great deal of fun just playing the part for this one episode because it is such an enormous departure from everything we've seen him do this season.
Yeah, it's really kind of been the stories that we've had lately have really been kind of about the Doctor, sort of about this emotional.
They've been like character analyses on the Doctor
instead of just having
instead of just
fun.
A story.
And I know that at Christmas they like to keep it light, but I wish they would take a clue from this and lighten it up for a bit and have some fun for a while before
I agree.
Plunge us into 4.5 billion years of depression again. It was such a nice change from everything we've had. So I really enjoyed it. I find that I watched this one twice, which is pretty rare for the Christmas specials. I find that by Boxing Day, the Christmas magic has worn off for me. So watching a Christmas special after Christmas is, I don't tend to do it. It's not just Doctor Who, it's everything.
Oh, no, it's everything.
It's everything.
No,
I'm
absolutely.
Done with it.
Once Christmas is over, I mean, once you hit the 26th, I'm done.
Ah, so I did watch this one again. It's only very lightly Christmas. I mean, if it weren't for the snow, for the most part, it's not very
the antlers,
yeah,
the holographic antlers,
right? But that's pretty.
I mean, the there's just hints of Christmas around. It's not a very Christmassy kind of story like we've had in some episodes of the past. I mean, it's just a story that happens to be set at Christmas, but it doesn't involve Christmas,
right? So, I'm going to, then you know, saying that, having said that, that I really, really enjoyed it. And mostly unreserved on my first watch, watching through and saying, well, you know, I had a lot of fun with that and I enjoyed it. And it looked like they had a lot of fun doing it. Now I'm going to, let's talk about River a little bit, who, as I've already said, I'm not a River fan. I think they took the idea and went too far
with it. Yeah,
it was fine when she showed up in Silence of the Library and she knew him and they were, but you know she was an ordinary person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe an extraordinary companion, but she was an ordinary person that had obviously had their lives touched by the Doctor. And as we've carried on, they've given her 200-year augmented lifespan and her Time Lord regeneration capabilities and the fact that she's a trained assassin killer designed specifically to kill the Doctor, etc. I mean, all that stuff is just baggage that has not helped that character along at all.
And we kind of visited some of that baggage in this particular episode in terms of her exploits.
Well, now that's my question. So she's going to kill King Hydroflex.
For the diamond.
And she's not going to kill all the people on the Starliner, but, you know, those two things do set each other up. She's an archaeologist. She's traveled back in time. She knows these people are going to die. therefore they're going to die. They're the ripe suckers to take. Is that any difference from King Hydroflex? Maybe King Hydroflex died about this time in the history of time. And so is murdering him just before he dies? I mean, it is murder, obviously, but...
That really offers up a lot of moral ambiguity.
Yes. Yes, it really does. And I wonder if that's how their way of trying to get around the fact that she's going to kill him. And of course, she doesn't make that argument. She doesn't say, well, you know, I'm from the future and he's going to die anyway. I might as well get the diamond out or anything like that. She says he's a horrible murderer who's killed millions of people and eats the survivors and the dead bodies. And so.
Well, we come into a really interesting causality sort of thing here because we know that when they are about to crash on what, Deryllium, I believe it is. That's the restaurant that she and the doctor are supposed to have their final date.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, and after they crash, the doctor is like, you know, he's telling some rescue man, you know, you should build a restaurant here. The guy's, I can't afford it. Here's a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
So now we get this. Oh, now I can build a restaurant. So this really becomes a little timey-wimey almost.
Oh, well, there's a whole bunch of time problems in this story, and I was going to save them a little bit, but...
But the only reason I bring that up is because then we have to come back to the moral issue, and that is, well, was River supposed to be on that ship to begin with? Was she supposed to try to kill Hydroflex to begin with? I mean, is this all following some sort of pre-established temporal loop of sorts? I mean, are all these events predetermined?
Okay, so let's separate Hydroflex and the ship, okay? The ship, I think, no. I think River could have been in the future, found a ship, found the logs, whatever it is an archaeologist does in that day and age, and said, well, we know at exactly this moment and time, all these incredibly rich, filthy, stinky people will be there. And so she could engineer to carry on a crime at that point. But because there's nothing in their destruction that appears to be in any way causally linked to her. In other words, she just happens to know that they're going to pass through a meteor storm and that's going to hull them and destroy the ship. So I don't think so. But with Hydroflex, maybe not. Maybe not. So how about this? He raided some people and... It blew up, and the diamond got lodged in his head. River said she pretended to be his nurse, so that kind of implies it's after he got wounded. So he could be on the downward spiral to dead already. And so she has intercepted herself between the moment that the projectile hit him in the brain and the moment he's going to die. And she's just hastening him on a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it could be that perhaps she did that in every instance, and... Of course, in the end, she didn't actually kill him.
Not really.
In a way, he himself killed him. Now, whether or not he went, you know, they play around with time too much, and they do it carelessly. And that's not, you know, that's not the worst of it. So let me ask some questions here. All right, since we're doing the time thing. She needed a time machine, right? She said that.
Right.
She stole the TARDIS because she needed a time machine. And she goes to a time and a place where she knows the ship's going to be destroyed. And she then says, well, I dug you up 400 years in the future. So we know she is from 400 years in the future, basically speaking, where her archaeological operations are. Are we supposed to believe that she needed the doctor's time machine to go back the 400 years? Because... If she did, well, first off, Hydroflex was the ruler of the galaxy that they were in. We're not sure which galaxy it was, but it had an Earth colony on it. She travels to the Andromeda galaxy in that Starliner.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a different galaxy altogether. And if she traveled back in time, or she traveled anywhere in time, to be at that right exact moment in time and space, how would they have known Hydroflex? Because they all worshipped him. If they went back in time with it. So I'm thinking that must be contemporaneous, or at least relatively contemporaneous, between the two. I don't know. I had some problems with that one. Unless it's just, you know, maybe it was like a month ago and she had to be at that exact moment, and that's why she needed the time machine. But it was all kind of like, don't think about it too hard.
Well, again, this is one of these episodes where time travel itself becomes a very integral part of the story. And I've always said that whenever that happens, that if you start to analyze the story too much, it always collapses. It cannot stand any kind of scrutiny once time travel is such a vital part to the overall narrative and all of the specific story details. It's, you know, as opposed to using time travel to just drop you into a period of time and now you have your episode, like Classic, who used to do a lot. I mean, we're not getting that as much anymore. I mean, we got a little bit of it in a couple of episodes here and there in this past season. But when time travel becomes so vital in order to tell your story, it always ends up suffering somewhat because you always come up with questions like this.
So did the Doctor lie to River at the end about how long the nights are on Deryllium?
I have no reason to believe that he did.
Okay. I can give you a reason to believe that he did. Or careless writing. They land, they crash the ship on Deryllium. The Doctor opens the door and looks out at the burning wreckage at night. He then steps to the console, flips the TARDIS forward a little bit. It's obviously forward.
Yeah.
He opens the door. It's not daylight. The wreckage is still burning. The first responder is on the site going, "Whoa, did you see the ship come down? It was just, it's like thing." So it just happened. It just happened last night. But
right.
Now it's daytime.
Do we have a time where the Doctor is talking to the rescuer?
Yeah. When he gives him the diamond.
What time during the day?
Well, it's daylight.
Because they say that it's, what, 24 years?
Yep.
Okay, well, maybe that was the end of the 24th year.
It could be. And I suppose that if the sun popped up like a cork, but usually the planets rotated at an even rate, so you'd be at twilight for a long time, just like you would in Alaska. You know, you either have very long days or very long nights, or you have a very long twilight if you're in between. So I think it's just, I think it's either he's just very careless, as I think we know he is with time travel. I can just do anything with time travel. Woohoo! Or that's what I think it is. But then if in fact he's not being careless and he's lying to River.
I don't think that. I really don't.
Then that, I don't know. Is that,
there's something rather sociopathic about it if he is. I can't know. I honestly don't think, after everything that he and River have been through, and this is a very unique meeting. Because now this is really the first obvious episode where they are no longer meeting in an opposite pattern.
I think we could find episodes.
Well, I'm sure we can, but this one is really clear that this is very much towards the end of River's life. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. And at the same time, this is way past anything that the Doctor has experienced already since he first met her as David Tennant. So, although that does actually bring up something else, too, and that is she knew every face of the Doctor. She even pulled out all his photos.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that means she must have bumped into him when he, you know, if we're going to follow that line, she must have crossed paths with him and never announced who she was, which would make sense.
Well,
she wouldn't want to contaminate the timeline.
Unless it was the Doctor who gave her the pictures.
Possible, but she was expecting one of the original 12,
right,
to show up,
which would mean that Matt Smith gave her the information at some point, and he would think he was the last.
Well, I'm sure he had every reason to think he was the last at that time.
Of course, it's interesting that he put the War Doctor in there because, well, you know, we don't talk about him.
Well, this could have been post War Doctor.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and who knows? He might have actually flown back in time a little bit, you know, dropped it off when she wasn't looking, and then left. But the point is that this is really a clear-cut case of now. This is the furthest along in the Doctor's life we've ever been, that we've got had a chance to see. This is the furthest along in River's life next to Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead. So, and I have no idea where the heck I was going with any of this.
I cannot remember. It was something to do with the fact that this is the first clear example that they're not in order. But
the point I was going to make is, given everything that they've been through, I really don't believe that at this point the Doctor would actually blatantly lie.
Well,
not to that degree, especially when he's being so incredibly honest on so many other areas, you know, saying, you know, there is no such thing as forever after. I mean, all things end. There is a last date. There is a last night. There's a last Christmas. You know, he points out all these things that are considered to be lasts.
Mm-hmm.
So he's being very honest with her.
Without saying, yeah.
Without telling her, I mean, although she suspects that there is going to be that she's got a little more life left in her. I mean, she knows she's coming to the end of the diary. She's not completely filled it up yet, but she's coming to the end of it. She's getting close, so she knows that she's got a little bit of time left.
Okay, so now here's another one. She's 200 years old.
Now, that one bugs me. How the heck did that happen?
Well, I guess it could be to do with her Time Lord energy that she had. She gave up all the regenerations. She gave up the regenerations, but this is not a regeneration.
No, she's just living a long time. But boy, does she look freaking good.
Well, for 200, yeah.
I suppose so. I mean, how many years did Matt Smith age when he was in Christmastown, whatever the heck they call it?
He was there at least 600 years, I believe.
Yeah, he was looking a little aged at the end of that.
Yeah. That diary that she carries is not her diary. That diary is her diary with the Doctor.
Right.
So that means that she could go on for another 100 years before she actually encounters him again. I mean, she's obviously been – she's lived 200 years. She's only bumped into him, you know, however many times.
I mean,
she doesn't need to feel like she's walking off of Deryllium and going, I'm going to meet you. Maybe never again.
Well, she is concerned at the fact that the diary's filling up. She states that. We know that she's running out of pages. And she does make the case that the Doctor would only give her – she surmises that the Doctor would only give her a diary that would have just enough pages as she needed. So the need to write anything more – was rapidly coming to an end, and that concerned her.
How on earth could Matt Smith, at the time of Let's Kill Hitler...
That's what she said!
No,
I'm just repeating...
No, I agree. I just... It's like...
It is kind of weird.
You know, if they're going in opposite directions, then she would know he's going forward, and so therefore he hasn't seen all of the stuff yet.
And the more that they meet, theoretically, and I still maintain that this is rubbish... That she'd be seeing, she'd know less and less of him, and I still say that's just utter nonsense.
Oh, well, there's absolutely no doubt that they did not meet.
They're completely meeting out of time. They're not meeting in opposite order. I don't care what Moffat is saying.
No.
There's way too much evidence to suggest that they're just meeting out of sync.
They met in The Impossible Astronaut at two different points in her life.
I know.
They met the child in the suit, and they met,
Mel.
At the same time.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing's just way out of whack. Yeah,
Did the Doctor meet after Let's Kill Hitler? So that would be the earliest that River's body existed, right? Because we saw the regeneration. So that's basically her birth as River Song. And then there's another episode after that with River in it, which has to be chronologically forward from Let's Kill Hitler, right? Wasn't the wedding of River Song after that? Yes.
I believe it is.
So, therefore, anyone who says that they're meeting in reverse order hasn't been paying attention. So, that's...
Now, there is something else, and I didn't have a chance to watch it to confirm it, but I could have sworn that either in Silence of the Library or Forest of the Dead, she's talking about... I mean, she meets David Tennant. Obviously, this is the first time he's meeting her. He has no idea who the heck she is. And she, I believe, she states the last time she saw the Doctor.
Yeah.
And he
had a new suit and a haircut.
And he was also leaving her and said that he felt very sad. or seemed very sad. I don't know. I can't remember the specifics on this, and I didn't have time to watch it.
I think she said he felt sad, yes. I believe you're correct.
I'm wondering.
Your face is so sad, yeah.
Is this the moment she's talking about?
Oh, yeah.
The date?
Absolutely. On Deryllium? Yeah. And that's where it was, too. It was on the Singing Towers of Deryllium. So that's what she said.
She did say that in those episodes?
Yeah.
Okay, I couldn't remember if she brought that up.
And in fact, this is a retcon on that too, because if you watched the, I think it was during series 6, the River Heavy series, they did those short films that were Knights of the Doctor or something like that, where when Amy and Rory are asleep, the Doctor would be off gallivanting with River, and he kept taking her to the Towers of Deryllium, and there's the scene where the two of them meet up with each other, and the younger doctor says to the older doctor something like, "Is this the?" And then the other doctor kind of gives a sad face and kind of gives a nod, like, "This is it. This is the last night." And they did that. Moffat did that to fill that story in, so that we would actually have the final moments of the Doctor and River. And then by coming back and doing this, Moffat had to retcon it. And if you listen to it, River says to him, "So I always wondered why you keep promising to take me here, but then you keep canceling out of it. Like that time there were the two of you, and it's that." He actually retconned his own patch to fill in whatever happened to River. It's like, yeah, I felt like writing a story, and so what the heck? We'll just toss that out.
I think Moffat was hoping a lot of people wouldn't remember that. But yeah, I remember
intentionally.
Yeah, and I remember. I mean, like I said, I couldn't remember all the details because I haven't watched those again.
Mm-hmm.
But something was like really nudging me in the back of my brain about that, so I was a little uncertain if that was the actual moment. And I haven't seen. Oh, man, I haven't seen Silence of the Library and Forest of the Dead in years. So a lot of those details were completely lost on me, except that I do remember her making that reference to the last time she sees the Doctor prior to the incident at the library.
Yeah, she specifically references the new suit, the new haircut, I'm pretty sure sad. Of course, that's when he gave her the sonic.
Right.
And very deftly, he scanned her brain. We saw that in this episode. When he pulled the sonic out, he scanned her head, put it away. That's where he encoded her into the sonic so that he could upload her into the library computer.
Well, that's rather – I will admit, for moments where Moffat had to retcon, I will give him credit that there are times where he does do attempts to make a good job at closing time loops.
Yes,
I think that's he's not very successful all the time, but little things like that I think are clever.
Yeah, it was acceptable. It was acceptable. I didn't need it because I had already seen those Night of the Doctor things, whatever they were.
Are those still available?
They're on the DVD. They're on the Blu-rays.
I don't have those.
Yeah, they're. Well, they may be on the DVDs as well. I don't know, but they're.
I don't have those either.
Well, there's your problem.
Yeah, I don't bother collecting them because I don't think they're worth collecting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm a heretic, but I love Doctor Who. What can I say?
So that's where they are. And I think all of the little minisodes that have been done over the years.
Yeah.
Whether it's Night of the Doctor or TARDIS Nights, that's what it's called, or the ones with a pond life. All of those have been put on the Blu-ray sets, and Moffat considers them to be canon.
Of course he would.
So, obviously, we did one of the regenerations in one of them, and I don't think anyone's doubting that one as canon.
I have to admit, I would like to see some of those shorts again, just so I can put this in more of some kind of context, as far as the entire timeline goes, although I'm sure that once I do, I'm going to start screaming at it. It's like, you got it wrong.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, clearly when I saw them originally, I mean, I had no real heavy context to put them in except for what we had seen so far and then well, you get more episodes coming along the way, and it just builds up the entire continuity. And then you start looking backwards and like, ooh, man, I can see where those things didn't quite fit. But, but that's always been a problem with Doctor Who.
Yeah. Well, especially when they – well, even classic Doctor Who, I'm not going to say that they kept
the continuity
right.
Yeah, but classic Doctor Who in a really weird way doesn't count because they weren't even trying to be serious. Not really.
Well, and they very, very, very rarely use time travel as an actual plot device. Time travel was a way to get you to a place, but not
– as I said, pardon the pun, but time travel is the vehicle for the story.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the story itself.
So anyway, let's see. What else do we have in this story? I hate to pick on it. No, I don't hate to pick on it. I like picking on things. I think we've mentioned the things we liked. I think it was is really the performance. It was kind of a bit of a romp. I'm not sure that I buy the premise of a spaceship that only takes passengers who are incredibly nasty, and even their staff have to be incredibly nasty. But yeah, what the heck? For that matter, King Hydroflax. If he's such a nasty guy,
why do people love him so much?
Yeah, why are 8 billion people all?
Unless it's all out of terror.
It's like a Kim Jong-il thing. Like, we love the dear leader.
Because if we don't, we die.
Could be an elitist. Although, how much can he eat when he doesn't have a body? I mean, just what does he do with it?
Where does it all go?
Yeah. Is it down there with the two guys' heads that are stuck in the rotating head?
Well, that's assuming that there were,
there aren't any others down there.
No, there weren't any other heads at the time. I mean, how many heads were down there? Apparently, maybe not any.
Okay.
I mean, because there's a whole lot in Hydroflax that's kind of fascinating as far as, not that I really buy it completely, but just as a character, there's something unusual about that.
Yes.
I mean, it's, Zaphod Beeblebrox has got nothing on that guy.
Here's one for the Hydroflax thing. So, first, her assistant says, I'll tell you everything you want to know. I'll even write it down, right? And they say, that won't be necessary. You'll be uploaded. Shh. Off of the head, sticks the head on, takes all the information, right? Does the same thing with Ramon. Now, when we get to the head waiter or whatever his particular title is, that guy on the ship, he says, well, if you spare me, I'll give you some more information. It's like, how is that even
remotely a
viable ploy?
That's not an argument.
I'm going to have all the information anyway.
If I upload you, I'll know everything anyway.
Right. So holding back on information does not seem like a viable safety net in this case. It's just a mistake. It's just a mistake there. I remember watching at the time I'm watching it, and the other one was, and this was James. While watching the episode, the whole idea of the TARDIS wouldn't take off when a being is half in and half out.
Oh, that I did not like.
Well, but here's James' argument, which I thought was very clever of him. When they put the robot body in, it had those two guys' heads in it.
Yeah,
so
what about their bodies?
Their bodies are outside the
TARDIS.
Their
bodies are outside. It should still not take off.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed that too. I was thinking, wait a minute. Yeah, the bodies are out there. The heads are inside. Why is it all of a sudden taking off now?
Yeah, it was.
It was a bad gimmick. I didn't buy it at all.
Oh, by the way, here's another one. I think maybe it's not. But let's just say that you want to go to the most exclusive restaurant in the universe, or one of the most exclusive restaurants in the universe, and you want the best balcony table, the best in the restaurant. Right? And you walk in and there's a year's waiting list. Do you think that the slightest chance that the first available reservation will be on Christmas Day?
No.
Exactly.
Not for 4 years' time.
Not for
maybe,
any time.
Maybe 40 years' time if they keep books that far ahead.
Well, but my point is that he didn't ask when's your first available Christmas. He asked when's your first available seating for that table, and it's on a Christmas day.
Happens to be Christmas Day? Yeah, that's pretty rare.
There's bound to be one that occurs in a July or something, in 3 years.
I know that. I'm going to give that one a hand wave because it's a Christmas episode. That's the only reason I'm giving a hand wave. Had this taken place any other time of the season, I probably would have been far more critical, but it's Christmas. Okay, I'm going to let it go.
We're going to let it go. We're going to let it go. That's it. That's interesting that you would let it go because it's Christmas. Now, not because of Bah Humbug or anything like that, but in other words, are these not meant to be proper Doctor Who stories? I mean, for crying out loud, they laid this out to begin with Christmas Invasion, that you can't pull this story aside, you can't pull the Christmas stories aside and ignore them in the canon of Doctor Who. Otherwise, we have no David Tennant regeneration
right.
story. So,
what I mean to say is, I'm only giving it the hand wave because this is, I understand what you're saying. I really get it, especially when I say if this episode had taken place any other time of the season, I kind of would be going, whoa, wow, what are the odds of that happening? But again, this is a Christmas episode. They're trying to give it the whatever little bit of a Christmas theme they can. It starts at Christmas time. They want to end it at Christmas time, just in a different year. Okay, it's weird. It's highly unlikely, but I'll give it the hand wave.
How about this? How can I help you? I'd like your first available booking for your best table on Christmas. Oh, that'll be 4 years from now.
Okay. Yeah, the doctor wants to do it Christmas time.
Maybe he wants to make it special or something. But I thought it was interesting that we did not see the owner of the restaurant in the future.
I was really hoping we would see him. That would have made it kind of perfect.
Yeah.
Instead of just getting the waitress or the hostess.
Was that a guy? Was that a famous person? Was that like a cameo from somebody who just like, hello?
I hadn't heard anything. I mean, I've looked at various stories on this episode, and no one has mentioned anything. All they've mentioned is, of course, obviously, we got Matt Williams. They mentioned Greg Davies as the head.
Yep.
And I can't think of the guy who Nonso Anozie, who was the voice of the robot.
I got to tell you, Greg Davies is as big as that robot in real life. That guy's a giant. If you ever see him in anything. I don't know how tall he is, but he must be pushing 7 foot.
Wow, really?
He's gigantic.
Yeah, but anyway, those are the only casting notes that I have seen in any of the stories. I haven't seen anything else about the rescuer who I assume will become the owner of the restaurant. Nothing. So it makes no real sense as to why. But what would have been a neat little touch if at some point we had actually seen Doria Maldivar.
His head could have been on the robot too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. What else? Is there anything else? I mean, we've got...
Well, the only thing that really bothered me, and it isn't some... It's more about the flow of the story. It starts off, it's very madcap, it's very light, it's fun, it's wacky. But when they get up to the ship, it just all of a sudden, the entire energy of the episode just shifts. And it felt very plodding, like trying to wade through mud. And it didn't become interesting again until River realizes she's standing next to the doctor. And then you get that realization. And then it starts to shift again. And then it becomes interesting a little bit more. But everything between that, did not like. Did not care for. It was boring. Very, very boring. And even that whole bit with the maitre d' trying to get this information out of River about the doctor, all in an attempt to save his own head. Again, very, very boring. I mean, okay, we got a little bit of interesting exposition from River about you can't love the stars and expect, or love the sun and expect the sun to admire you back. And so that entire scene where she then makes that realization that the doctor is right there, that's interesting. And from that point on, the story remains interesting. It had me engaged, but everything between the moment they beam up to the ship to where River begins to realize that she's with the doctor, everything in the middle of that, I just did not like. I felt it was unnecessary.
Well, I mean, it didn't bother me.
It felt really out of step with, I mean, if we're going to take this to be, I'm going to call this a three-act story. And if that's act two, then me no likey act two. I like acts one and three, but not act two.
Well, I mean,
Yeah, but two out of three ain't bad.
Yeah. All right. I will say I thought that it was kind of hard to believe that River didn't figure out the doctor. I mean, that she was so blind.
She should have realized it sooner.
When he said he was the doctor, I'm the doctor, the face, you don't recognize me, over and over again. There were many opportunities, and she just didn't pick up on it, didn't even seem to cross her mind.
No, not even for a second, not even a, huh? Nothing. It was just, she was oblivious, 100% oblivious.
For crying out loud, at the very least, when he said, you know, I'm the doctor, she should have at least pulled out her card and said, wait a minute, I haven't seen the third doctor, but this guy does kind of look like him. You know, there is
some similarity. Yes.
From that. Well, but this is one that she obviously has no
dealings even
with any of those doctors. So, I mean, it's like, I know, I've seen all your faces.
You're not it.
No,
and you're only allowed to have 13 faces. Well, 12 in this case. Yeah. And this ain't one of them. But at the same time, there should have been some kind of moment where she stops and says, wait a minute, there was only one the doctor, and you're not it.
Yeah, I mean, for crying out loud, how many times?
She could have said something. You know, it could have pulled, you know, that fun little line that happened during the Dan Quayle debates, you know, where Dan Quayle compared himself to JFK, and his opponent says, you know, I knew John F. Kennedy, blah, 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 and you're not him. You know, and it could have been something like that. There could have been a great little homage to, you know, where River is saying, well, I know the doctor. He has done this, and you're not it, or you're not the doctor. And that would have been real. That kind of would have been funny to say, I know the doctor, you're not him, you know, and for him to kind of give a reaction off that. It could have been entertaining.
Yeah.
But at least there would have been some kind of acknowledgement on her part at that moment.
Instead of
just being blind.
Yeah, the story requires that the doctor be able to watch her when she thinks she's not being watched. And so we see the person that River plays at. She's free.
Oh, she's more than just free. I mean, she
pretends to be not interested in the doctor, whether that's to protect the doctor or what. She's maybe committing horrible crimes, but then all of those things, like I said, because it's a time travel issue, all of those things could be washed clean or absolved in the wake of time. It's like, yeah, I'm not really killing everyone on this ship because they're going to die anyway. I'm not killing King Hydroflex. He's going to die anyway. I'm Indiana Jones. I'm getting here before they put the idol in the room or whatever the case may be.
It's all some very warped form of rationalization.
So at the beginning, but what I'm getting at the beginning is she's presented at her worst. I mean, she's really presented at her worst. She's going to murder somebody. She's contracted somebody to do it. It's all
she's,
money.
She's got more than one husband. I mean, she's a floozy.
And then as we get closer to the end of the episode, some of those things are absolved, and then some of them are made worse. Like, I wasn't really going to give this back to the people. I'm just in it for the money. And I think that one's genuine. I think the fact
genuine. And I think had she known that the doctor was there, she might have sugarcoated it or downplayed it a bit.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, we're getting to see River as she is, and maybe this is the first time the doctor's ever gotten the opportunity to see River as she is. Maybe this is what gave him the ability to finally go, you know? Because he could have just left when they were on Deryllium and she was unconscious. He could have just left.
Yeah. And
said, you know, that's it. This is, I didn't take you to dinner here. There's no restaurant here. But instead, he looks at the diamond and he puts it in motion. He puts her end in motion here.
Yeah.
In that piece of time. So perhaps that's because he finally – I'm not saying that what he saw he disliked, And I'm not getting that, although there were things obviously he disliked. But, you know, this is finally not River putting on a show for him.
True.
And of course we get to see that even though she's claiming not to have feelings throughout most of the episode for the Doctor, and in fact is downright derogatory of him. The damsel.
Yeah.
That's his code name, the damsel in distress. Come on.
That's just to me that smacks as being more of an emotional barrier, just so that she doesn't have to deal with the idea of him not being there for her. It's easier to, I mean, if you have someone that's an object of affection and they're not returning it, it's easier to warp that into some kind of hate.
Right. Yeah,
you just know, so you can. It's easier to hate somebody than to have unrequited love, like she's really got. And it isn't until she's being really pressured onto the point that she finally gives way. But yeah, up to that entire time, she's being just really dismissive of him right in front of his presence without even knowing it.
I think it's partially both. I think you've got it's that natural defensive mechanism, but at the same time, I think it's also, it may be a protective mechanism too, because as we see, when it's obvious River is outed as something very important to the Doctor, she becomes a tool that they're hoping to use to capture the Doctor. The Doctor is the greater prize.
Yeah, it's true.
And by being dismissive of him, it's like, yeah, you know, he's a useful tool. But I think
on some
what we're
level,
seeing is there was something much deeper there that she had that finally came out at that last moment, just before she figured out the Doctor was standing there. And she
believes it to some point, because Hydroflax, or at least the robot, does do the scan and detects her as being very honest, because she believes it.
And her speech almost mirrored something I think I heard Moffat say on a interview,
like,
once.
Like an interview or documentary or something?
Yeah, I think I've heard almost those exact words from him before, where it was like, the Doctor doesn't do that. You know, he's asked the question in other times. He says, why wouldn't the Doctor do it? But there have been times when he's also said, you know, the Doctor is so much more than that.
Yes.
That's too small for him. And Missy even said it in the Dalek Sorcerer's Apprentice-ish thing.
Ah.
Mickey's Apprentice. She says the same thing to Clara, basically, you know, we're Time Lords. You're thinking on the wrong level about how we interact with each other. And because I think there was an implication that maybe they were something more than friends.
Yeah.
And then Missy just shot her down immediately.
So, yeah, that was with the confession dialer, yeah,
right.
I think.
So it felt like probably true. I think it probably is true.
I do too.
I think the Doctor does not.
He does not romantically love.
He loves her in the same way he loved Clara.
Yeah.
And Sarah Jane and all the others that have.
He has a very. I'm sure he has a. He does have a very special place in his hearts for River, but.
You know, maybe she's at Rose level.
To some degree, River. No, go ahead.
I was going to say maybe she's at Rose level. I mean, Rose level does. Rose is obviously. For the people who like to ship them, which are you just sick bastards, I don't go along with that. But I do believe that Rose was there, clearly a healing influence. I think that was intended to be. I think she was the healer of his damage from the Time War. You know, I think he was doing the penance for the things he thought he had
Which
done.
Which would make sense, since it's the image of Rose we saw with the moment.
That's like a nurse. That's like that you fall in love with your nurse kind of thing.
She's the Florence Nightingale.
Yeah. I think that's what we get out of Rose. So, I mean, she's a pet like all the rest of them, but she's a special pet. And I think River, in a way, is too. Could very well just simply because of the way he met her. You know, it's like, wow, I have this sort of,
You know, and she's been there, at least with the episodes that we've seen, she has been there in very key, critical moments of the Doctor's life. And those are just the episodes that we've seen. We know that there are other times where they have met where it's been very benign.
Mm-hmm.
Like when she breaks back into her prison and she's telling the guard that she just came back from a date. And I think they were in Central Park, if I recall correctly. And it was nothing. It was just a date.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember all of her excuses of where they've been.
But I do believe that there were many other opportunities where they did meet, where nothing of any consequence actually happened. And the only ones that were of consequence were the ones that were aired. So with all that, I can see the doctor having a very special perspective and maybe some very special feelings for her, maybe more than just a pet, like past companions have been, maybe almost on the, along the line of as close to an equal as possible. But the kind of romantic love that had been suggested, or at least that River would like for there to be, no, clearly isn't there. He has love for her, but he is by no means in love with her, just as she is with him.
And every situation we've seen, like the wedding of River Song, anything that he does that seems romantic, if you will, or like getting married to her, you know, they go through the hand fasting ceremony, and what does he whisper to her? Look in my eyes.
Look in my eyes.
I'm actually a robot.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a trick. It is a game they're playing, and yet then after that point, she goes on about them being husband and wife. It's almost like a joke between the two of them.
But at some point, he does tell her his name.
Yes, he apparently does, and as far as I can tell, it must be probably here at the Deryllium.
It might have been.
But it's and so here's the question: is it also have we played fast and loose with River and getting married here in this episode? Whereas, you know, some people say, "Oh yeah, absolutely, they're married," and then other people will say, and I fall in that camp. It's like that really wasn't they really didn't get married there?
Not really, because he didn't tell her his name,
or he didn't. It wasn't even him.
Not really. It was a robot.
A robot with him inside of it. It was an act that they were putting on to do the thing. But nonetheless, we have in this episode, River is the married to the king, although she's not really. She's married to the diamond, and she's married to Ramon, but not really because Ramon doesn't remember it because he was getting all needy. So River marries people at the drop of a hat. She may classify the doctor in exactly the same way.
It's possible, but I think she married people the drop of a hat for advantage.
And that would be the doctor too.
Well, so, yeah.
Or she just counts it, you know? It's like, well, I'm, you know, it's all right, close enough. The doctor's playing along with it. Why shouldn't I? The bit about the name is still the hardest part, because yes, yeah, in the wedding of River Song, it seems like he's going to whisper his name to her. But I think the reason that we think he's going to whisper his name to her is because we know that she in turn whispers his name to him in Forest of the Dead.
Right.
I don't think he actually says, "I'm going to tell you my name." He says, "I'm going to tell you something that you must never tell anybody," or something like that. It's a secret that I'm going to share only with you. And so he's not saying he's going to say his name. And then he says, "I'm looking my eyes," or whatever it happens to be. So a lot of people have made this assumption that that's how Time Lords get married.
Yeah, but
and there's
I think
no
most
basis
Time Lords
for that at all.
I know. I think most Time Lords. I mean, obviously, in the case of like Romana, for example,
Rassilon.
I mean, they never hid their names. Morbius, yeah. They never hid their names. Only the Doctor did that.
And the Master.
That's true. So the whole name thing. No, that's not part of a wedding ceremony.
Yeah.
So maybe they truly did get married then in that episode.
So,
if the name had nothing to do with it, then yeah, maybe they actually were married, and she's just being a complete and total floozy after that.
Well, you know, flexible future, 58th century, whenever it is that she's from. That's you know, just the way they roll. They're all polyamorous.
Guess so.
So anyway. That is all I have. I'm going to say I do have here the TARDIS Wikia in front of me, and the series of shorts were called Night and the Doctor. So not Night of the Doctor. And there were several episodes, one of which was called Last Night, and their summary reads like this. With no fewer than three River Songs from different times roaming the TARDIS, the Doctor has to avoid contaminating the timeline. Along the way, he encounters a future version of himself en route to their final outing, as described in TV Forest of the Dead. The Doctor sends the second River away by activating her vortex manipulator, and the third River leaves with her Doctor, but not before revealing that this will be the last time his wife will see the 11th Doctor.
I've never seen that.
After they leave, the Doctor heads off to his adventures with the correct River.
I have never seen that.
Yeah, it's, you know, 2 or 3 minutes long, something of that nature.
But sometimes those little shorts are really vital. I mean, they tell a lot.
Yes. Well, look it up. That's called Last Night. If you probably
see the Doctor Who Last Night. Well, I go to the TARDIS Wiki. That's not a problem.
Well, I mean, you'll probably find it on YouTube.
I will look for it. Night and the Doctor.
Night and the Doctor is the series, and Last Night. That one particular episode.
Okay, I'll look for that on YouTube because, yeah, I never saw that.
But there's like Bad Night, Good Night, First Night, Last Night. Those are the four episodes of it.
I will look those up when I have a moment and see if I can find them on YouTube and watch them myself because that sounds highly interesting.
And Last Night's what he had to retcon to
do. Because the only one that I remember, is when he wakes up Amy and Rory in their house.
Oh, those are Pond Life. That's
Pond Life, yeah. Yeah,
that's
I saw
the next
those.
Year, I think.
Oh, yeah, I did. Then I don't remember seeing any of the ones before that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Bad Night, Good Night, Last Night. I don't remember any of those.
I'm not even sure where they aired in the first place, if that makes sense. I mean, I don't remember whether they were YouTube-only kind of things or BBC webpage or what, but
might have been BBC only, but still, you would have thought that the internet would have buzzed about it.
Well, I remember that they did to some degree anyway, but
well, I'm going to have to look for those because I think I need to see those now.
Yeah, it'll foul the whole thing up. Anyway.
Great.
So, well, I mean, it does fill in quite a bit with River Song, actually. It fills in a lot of little pieces there. All of them do, to some degree. Stuff about getting her in and out of Storm Cage, what he does when Amy and Rory are asleep in the TARDIS, etc. Yeah,
I definitely need to see these.
Anyway, but despite all the fact that we've been picking on it and having fun with it, hopefully the final episode of River Song, and I say that despite the fact that I enjoyed it, I still think, please, we're done with River Song. Please,
I think we need to be. I mean, and I unlike you, I mean, I love Alex Kingston. I really do. I've always enjoyed her roles. And for the most part, I found her stories to be – I found her to be enjoyable. I think a lot of the stories that she's in have had a lot of problems.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of problems.
Day of the Astro Impossible Astronaut is a particularly awful example.
Don't even get me started on Let's Kill Hitler. I mean, that to me
is – Let's Kill Hitler, Wedding and River Song.
That's an abomination. Yeah. And the Wedding River Song is another one that's just got really huge, gaping flaws in it. But I liked her.
I can't remember Good Man Goes to War or not. Whether or not I don't remember my reaction to that one. I think it was just kind of mediocre. But yeah,
I had issues with that too. I remember I had problems, small problems, but they were there, and they were kind of key to the story. So, yeah, I had some problems with A Good Man Goes to War. And I think, I hate to say it, but I think out of all of that river-heavy season, that was the least offensive of the bunch.
That's my recollection is that one didn't have much to do with her, frankly.
No, because it was more about
– Well, I remember she wouldn't come.
Oh, right.
They showed up at Storm Cage and said, well, we need you. And I said, I can't go this time. You'll see why.
Yeah.
And then she shows up at the
because
end.
Because she knows that her past self is going to be showing up there, and that's when the Doctor is going to learn everything about her. So, yeah, I get that. But the story is more about Amy and Mel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So River was not really that vital a component to mess it up.
Right. I can't think of any. Did we have any River songs after that? After Wedding of River Song?
Yeah, we did. And that one, but it was the digital construct. So that one really doesn't count.
Is that the only one? So when Clara's around, we didn't have any more?
Nope. Just that one, which, which one was that? Was that Name of the Doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only one. I mean, one thing that really bugged me about the Wedding of River Song, I mean, I don't want to go belabor this point too much, but when she finally shows up at the end, she's come back from the Byzantium. It's like, oh, God, really?
No, wait, that's when she comes back at the end. No. That's after she's come back from the Byzantium.
And Amy thinks that the doctor is dead.
No, that's at the end of Wedding of River Song.
That's what I mean. Yeah, at the end of the Wedding River Song.
Good Man Goes to War.
No. At the end of Wedding River Song, when all of a sudden we have a different river who shows up, says, I just came out from the Byzantium. You were so young back then. Oh, let me tell you a little secret. The doctor's alive. And I just thought, really? Oh, man, we're just playing with time a little bit too much. And I think that's been my big problem with a lot of these River Song episodes is that it just gets so flirtatious. I mean, it goes beyond timey-wimey. I mean, and I said this once to Michelle, it becomes crappy-wappy.
And then you need the nappy-wappies.
Yeah. I mean, it becomes really ugly in terms of the whole time continuity aspect of it. That it just doesn't hold up in any kind of examination. And that's always been the problem with the River Song episodes.
Yeah.
So this being hopefully the last one, and I think also in terms of character development, this is the perfect swan song for her. Really.
It's very difficult to have a character who's moving around in time. And, you know, whether or not you're going to subscribe to the it's always in reverse order, which obviously it isn't, or you're going to subscribe to the you're hopping around in character, you have a character development that occurs in episode A. And if episode B is before episode A, that character development hasn't occurred. But nonetheless, they're going to write it as if it did because that's the audience problem. Remembers. Yes.
You know, and the thing is, I don't think it would really take that much effort. I mean, one of the neat things that we did get to see, although if they kept bringing River back time after time after time, you know, in different points of time, then this would become really boring. And that is when they have to sync, when they start comparing diaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of fun if maybe you meet like maybe once every season. Okay, I can take that. And then figure out where you are. But then your showrunner has got to be really, really cognizant of where the character is at this time. And if you're going to have any major development of the character at some point, then you have to be very aware as to whether to address it because you're further along in that person's line or ignore it and then write the character maybe with a bit more naivete or something like that. Very tricky thing to do. I think it could be done. But I think that Moffat is just a little bit too sloppy when it comes to this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So with all of that, I think this is the perfect ending for River because all indications are that her next story is one that we've seen already. And that will be Silence of the Library and Forest of the Dead. So I think they should just leave it at that and let this be the swan song for her.
Mm-hmm.
Let this be the farewell.
And a good farewell it was.
And it's a good farewell, especially after the speech that the doctor gives when they're at the restaurant. I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah.
So just let it be and don't do something stupid, you know, like Clara flying around in a restaurant TARDIS.
Why'd you have to remind me of that?
Don't.
I had put it out of my head.
Yeah.
Out of my head.
Misery loves company. Mm. Don't cheapen the farewell. It was a good farewell for River. Let it stand.
It was a good one. It was a good Christmas special.
Yes, it was.
It was a good Christmas special. It was a good episode of Doctor Who. A good Christmas special.
No, it was a good episode, yes.
Well, Ben, we don't have any more Doctor Who for a while.
Not for a while. Which means we've got lots of other shows to watch.
Oh, have we got lots of other shows to
watch. We got Blake 7. We have Space 1999. And God knows what else you've got on that plate of yours.
Yeah, those are the two main ones we'll be working on for a while.
Now, I did hear that Doom Patrol is now available on home video.
Doom Patrol.
And, I mean, we started on that, and then we kind of left
alone. Oh, Doomwatch, Doomwatch.
Or did Doomwatch, not Doom Patrol. What am I saying? Doomwatch, yes.
You're confusing that with Fusion Patrol.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm thinking of a comic book series called Doom Patrol. That was my
Rat
bad.
Rat Patrol.
Yeah, no, you're right, Doomwatch. Yes, Doomwatch is available on home video now.
VHS or Beta?
No, actually, I think it's on DVD.
Wow. So is Future Cop, Beyond Westworld. There's some great stuff.
I never saw that.
You're lucky. You're beyond the stuff.
I never watched Future Cop. I mean, I saw Westworld, and I've seen Future World, but I never saw Future Cop.
Ah. Anyway. Yes. Future Ernest Borgnine?
No.
As a cop saddled with a android partner?
Oh, God. That's an old trope.
Yes, it's older than Holmes and Yo-Yo, though.
Ugh. I've only seen it done well once.
Mm.
That was a Fox sci-fi series called Almost Human, and it actually was really good. But for the most part, man, that just gets really tired. And Ernest Borgnine? Seriously? Youch.
Yep.
Man, that's going to be painful.
Early 70s. Early 70s.
Painful.
But, you know, never can tell whether they're going to add that to the collection. I just want to say before we go any further, Fusion Patrol, we're pushing 250 episodes here.
Wow.
And I know. It's like we are rapidly approaching 250 and many, many years. And if you, dear listener, would like to help us continue on for another 250 episodes.
Send us money.
or check out patreon.com/FusionPatrol, where you can become a patron of Fusion Patrol. It's a digital site where people can try to crowdfund artistic endeavors online. It's kind of a new approach, and it's very interesting. But we would appreciate it if you would consider Fusion Patrol as possibly someone to help sponsor so that we can keep going, so that we can purchase discs like Future Cop. Okay, that's probably not the best sales pitch. Maybe some other show that you recall that's a classic from your childhood.
I don't know. But, I wouldn't mind doing Space Precinct.
Oh, Space Precinct. That's another. Yeah, we'll have to do that after Space 1999 because
it's Gerry Anderson.
Yeah, that was an interesting show. I
rather liked it.
It didn't get its fair due. I think
I agree.
I think that's the case. Anyway, again, that's patreon.com, patreon.com/FusionPatrol if you want to check that out, and we would appreciate it. Ben, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
And listeners, I do hope you'll join us all again on the next episode of Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
And Merry Crimbo.
Merry Crimbo.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes or stop by and visit us at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/FusionPatrol. Our Twitter username is @FusionPatrol, or you can just send us a comment at feedback@FusionPatrol.com. Come check out our new YouTube channel at youtube.com/FusionPatrol. Please, come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.